Welcome to Riff Talk on RiffManiaRadio.com. A place for new music, upcoming artists, and specialized interviews.
Okay, once again, we're talking with my good friend and co-host, Jeff DeBerry. You're listening to Rock Talk, and how have you been, Jeff, since we last talked?
I've been good, Jason. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and of course, what I want to talk a little bit today to start off the show with Ted Nugent, who was once known more for his music than his political views, that he's known for today. I was reading a couple articles that I was kind of interested in. The first being was, last time we talked on the first episode of Rock Talk was about the recent shooting at the school in Connecticut. And as you know, after that shooting, a lot of stuff about gun control came out, and we were talking a little bit about that. Well, since then, Ted Nugent's come out, of course, kind of against gun control, and one of the recent articles he was quoted as saying he believes gun owners are the next Rosa Parks, we will sit down on the front seat of the bus. I was curious, when you hear like a quote like that, what do you think?
I think it's honestly, I think it's just gotten out of control, the whole thing. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Like I said before, the government is going to do whatever they want to do, you know, and regardless of what, people such as Ted Nugent, I'm a big fan of Ted Nugent's music, but, some of the stuff he says, he contradicts himself all the time. I've read these articles, if that's what he believes, then let him believe that. But maybe it's so. You know, I don't, like I said before, I have nothing against people owning guns. I personally don't care if people own guns or they don't own guns. As far as I'm concerned, they could ban guns for all eternity, and it wouldn't affect my life not one single bit. You know, so no matter what they do, it's not going to affect me. I was reading, he had a couple of points, made a couple of good points about, and which I have to agree with, as far as regardless of what kind of laws they pass, it's not going to change anything. People are still going to continue to get shot. People are going to continue to get killed. Making people register their firearms. And people are not going to run out to start doing it. You know, they may not do it at all. How is anyone going to know that they even have a firearm if it's not registered? Or what are they going to do? Go door to door and see if people have guns? The whole thing is just silly. Something had to be done. But, failing, just banning firearms completely and making them illegal and literally going into people's houses and seizing their guns, which is never going to happen. No laws that they pass in my opinion, are going to make a difference. These things are going to continue to happen. As far as, what could they do, to protect the kids in schools? And I guess, put armed guards in front of the school. Stop people from entering, find some type of security system so people can't just break in there. I don't know. Ted Nugent, I think, is, in my opinion, just going a little overboard, he's always been an outspoken person about a lot of stuff, he reminds me a lot of Charlton Heston.
Yeah.
He was a big, he was involved with the NRA and stuff, and he had the same kind of attitude. It's like, you always say, for my cold, dead hands, and then maybe, all right, okay, whatever. Like I said, to me, it doesn't mean anything to me. I don't care if someone owns a gun or not. Like I said, personally, I don't like guns. I will never own a gun. I refuse to live in fear. I refuse to own a gun because I'm living in fear that someone's going to break into my house and try to shoot me or my family or kill me, you hear about the stuff on the news all the time, you know, and you know, out of the millions of people that live in this country, you know, it's not like it's happening to every single person, you know. I mean, they make it sound like, you know, the way the media presents it, and they make it sound, it's like, you know, they like deliberately put people in fear. They want you to be afraid, you know. And people feed off this kind of stuff, and then, oh man, you know, so and so, you know, 100 miles away, they got their house broken into, and they have guns, and I need to go buy me a gun so that don't happen to me. The chances of that's going to happen, you probably have a better chance of winning the lottery or getting struck by lightning. You know, not to say that it can happen. Of course, it could happen. Anything could happen. Anything is possible. You know, but I mean, the chances. Like I said, I lived in Chicago all my life. I never had anyone point a gun at me. And Chicago is, as I said before, you know, like the murder capital of the world. It's not nothing to be proud of, but that's just the way that it is out there. You know, I'm not afraid to walk down the streets of Chicago. You know, and I'm not going to be afraid to sit in my home.
Yeah, you know.
What am I going to do? Have a recliner with two holsters on either side, and have a rifle in one and a semi-automatic shotgun in the other, just because I'm afraid someone's going to break into my house? No, that's just ridiculous as far as I'm concerned. I just can't see me living my life like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can get killed just going out the front door and getting in your car and you know, some drunk driver hits you and kills you head on. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I think, you know, there's certain decisions people can make. You know, I mean, for example, you don't go to a certain part of town, you know, late at night. You know, if you avoid hanging out with, you know, drug dealers and people that are, you know, have got a criminal background, you can maybe avoid certain situations more so than, you know, a lot of stuff that happens is just based on people's, you know, stupid decisions. But I think getting back to what we've been talking about, the gun control issue, I'm a fan myself of Ted Nugent, you know, like you said, his music, and he's always been a kind of an over-the-top guy, but I think one thing, when you read an article about something like this, Ted Nugent, you know, says gun owners of next Rosa Parks, it starts a discussion, at least. It gets people talking. Maybe, you know, people that are into his music that might not otherwise give us a second thought, it starts them talking, you know? So I guess that's one good thing that came out of this, you know?
Yeah, that's about all that's going to come out of it, you know? I mean, like I said, they're going to do whatever they want to do. And Ted Nugent, you can do whatever he wants to do. I mean, he can go as far as getting himself arrested, because that's what they'll do to him, you know, just like they would anybody else, you know. So I mean, he's always been like that, you know. That's, you know, I mean, I'm not gonna, like I said, I like his music. I've always liked his music. He's a great guitar player. He's a great songwriter, you know. But people like him. He likes to hunt and stuff like that. This man goes on like safaris and stuff. He hunts tons of big game animals, and that's what he likes to do. You know, and I don't think anyone's going to come into Ted Nugent's house and see all his guns, and he's not going to be able to go hunting anymore. You know, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't ever see anything like that happening. And I think a lot of it is people are just. I think some people are just, you know, that they were somewhere are born were born in into an environment where there's guns around, and it's their right to own a gun, and you're not going to take my right away from me. If I want to own a gun, I'm going to own a gun. You can't tell me I can't. You know, that's what I get from a lot of it. You know, people, I'm not knocking people for that. I don't want anyone to think that I am, because I'm not. Because if you feel you need to own a gun, or if you just like owning guns, collecting them, you know, whatever. You know, hey, that's your thing. You know, God bless you. You know, but I mean, for me, I don't need one. I don't care about them. And whatever laws they pass, I don't care. It's not going to affect my life either way, you know.
Yeah, you know, I just think that with owning guns, of course, comes certain responsibilities. For example, if you believe in your right to own a gun, and you're gonna, like you said, collect guns, that for one thing, you know, you got to make sure to, you know, keep them locked up away from children, because in the event a child gets hold of your gun and even accidentally kills somebody, you know, you've got a huge responsibility right there. Just, you know, maybe if, like I said, if you go to that responsibility of making sure guns are away from children and they're put up in a safe place, you know, then you know, all the more of a power to you. But again, I think with owning guns comes a certain level of responsibility.
Yep, exactly. You know, and that's the thing. You know, people need to keep them in a place where someone who has no business can have putting him, you know, having a gun in their possession can get to it. You know, but the fact of the matter is that those things are still going to continue to happen. You know, it's like saying, you know, we're going to try and stop car accidents from happening, you know, and stuff like that. It's going to happen. There's nothing you can do to completely, you know, take it away. You know, I mean, and I personally don't think that, you know, changing the gun laws are going to change anything. I don't think it's going to stop someone from going into a convenience store and sticking a gun in someone's head, you know, and stealing money from them. I don't think it's going to stop people from breaking into people's homes because you know they need money to feed their addictions or whatever or whatever the reasons may be, and they're going to take their stuff and do whatever. It's not going to stop people from you know, one person getting mad at another one and losing their mind and going and getting a gun and blowing them away. It's not going to happen. That stuff is always going to be around. You know, in other countries where they've never been able to own guns, you know, like England and other countries, they don't have that kind of stuff. But here in the United States, you know, it's for hundreds of years, it's been your constitutional right to own a gun. And so therefore, I mean, these type of things, people are going to have them, and they're going to do the things that they do. You know, it's never going to, it's the government is spinning their wheels, and it's not gonna change anything, you know. And people are gonna continue to put the president down because he wants to do this. But you know, whatever happened, whatever they do is what they're gonna do. You know, if they think that's gonna solve the problem, well then, you know, that's what they're gonna do. And if they go ahead and do all that, well, we can just sit back and watch it and see everything unfold, and just watch things like this, like what happened in Connecticut. You know, what happened in Columbine and all these other places. It's just gonna continue to happen. The only, I think really personally, the best way to try and prevent those things from happening is to, you know, institute some type of security. You know, I think that's really a better idea. But because people are gonna pass these laws, you know, that are gonna, you know, stiffer gun laws and stuff like that, some people are gonna lose their mind. You know, there's people like that out there, and they're going to lose their mind, and they may start doing it even all the more, just despite the government. You know what I mean? And I really believe that, you know, I could see something like that happening. You know, but you know, like I said, Ted Nugent, he's gonna continue to talk his smack and say whatever he wants to say, and I guess he'll read these articles and. You know, not just gun control and the other stuff too. You know, he contradicts himself over and over, and you know, one minute he's saying one thing, the next minute he's saying something else. So I mean, I really don't pay no attention to him. I just kind of shake my head. All right, dude, you know, whatever. Okay.
Yeah, like I said,
you're nuts. So. Yep.
Like I said, these days he's more known for his political views and stuff, which is very interesting because, like you said, like you, I first got into him because of his music, but I think at the same time he's a very smart guy, because even if you read some of his stuff where he kind of contradicts himself, I mean, like the articles that we're talking about that I emailed you, like this thing that kind of got me was the headline, like, you know, Ted Nugent says gun owners are the next Rosa Parks. I mean, that's kind of a crazy thing to say, but at the same time, it got our attention. We're talking about it. At the same time, he's getting out there talking about his views. He's getting his message across. So, you know, I think it's a way for him to, you know, keep his name in the press. And he's just always been an over-the-top kind of guy where he just says kind of crazy things. But you know, again, here we are talking about it. And just another example of that is there's another article I sent you where he was talking about he's going to name his upcoming tour, Ted Nugent's Black Power 2013 Black Power Tour, or something like that. It says, there's no doubt, this is a quote, fact from it, says, there's no doubt that my 2013 tour will be the best of my life, with world-class virtuoso paying tribute to our black heroes nightly. It's only fitting that this year's tour is aptly titled Ted Nugent's Black Power 2013. Say it loud, my music is black and I'm proud. I mean, again, that's a great headline and it gets our attention, but I think that's part of the reason he does this stuff. And I think, if anything, in looking at all these articles, what he has to say, I'm kind of surprised he's never thought about having like a political show, you know, on one of the cable channels or something. I think people would kind of tune in just to hear what he, kind of like a Howard Stern, kind of tune in just to hear what he had to say, you know. And,
I like the part here, you know, it says, he also questioned if it would have been better if the South had won the Civil War, and how can we forget the issue of Ted Nugent calling himself a black Jew at a Nazi Klan rally in response to controversies of Obama. You know, I mean, he just, I don't know, sometimes I think, you know, he is a very intelligent guy, you know, but, you know, some of the things he says is just like off the wall, and it's kind of silly, really, to be honest with you, in my opinion. I wasn't into his music. I'll buy his records, you know, but when he starts talking, I'll turn the channel, because I don't really care about what he has to say. I really couldn't care less what he thinks, you know, and he's not anybody. He's not in a position to change laws. He's never going to become the president. None of this is ever going to happen. He's going to continue to do this, because, you know, sometimes it's almost like, you know, he's looking for attention, maybe, I don't know. He has some points, some good points on certain things, but then he goes on and contradicts himself. So how can someone, he says one thing and then says something else. So, I mean, it's just like the, you know, almost like the boy who cried wolf. In a way, you know, it's like you keep saying one thing, and then you turn yourself, and then you turn the other cheek, and then you say something else, and that's totally the opposite of what you just said. I mean, for me, people like that, I don't even associate with people like that, because I personally couldn't trust them, you know, and some of, you know, I mean, I won't believe anything they said, you know, and I personally would have no need for having someone like that in my life on any level. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I never even thought about that, Jeff. I mean, and I guess it's a good thing he hasn't given. Could you imagine a world where Ted Nugent was the president of the United States? I mean, just think that would be like, you know.
Yeah, no, actually, I couldn't. Yeah. I think I'd probably move to Canada.
Okay. Now, on that note, I'd like to talk a little bit about, like you're saying, Ted Nugent was originally known as a musician. So I was curious, how did you first get into his music, and do you have a favorite Ted Nugent song or album?
I started listening to Ted Nugent back when I was in high school, yeah. You know, when he, Double Live Gonzo and stuff like that, you know, I mean, I've never been a huge fan,
yeah.
You know, like I am with some other bands and stuff, but I mean, I've always liked his music, you know. He's just a straightforward, hard driving, hard rock. You know, he's not heavy metal in any form. He's a hard rock and roll musician, you know. And he's a great guitar player. He's an extremely talented man, you know. And I mean, I used to listen to him back in high school. I actually seen him open for Kiss in 2000 on Kiss's farewell tour. Back in 2000, I seen him in Chicago opening, and he was really good. It was a good show. He put on a great show. You know, it was very entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen him live, but I've always been a fan of his music. I'd have to say probably my favorite song and even album probably be Cat Scratch Fever. That's just ultimate Ted Nugent, I think. You and I got on the phone today, I was reading that he's finally talking about getting a new album out sometime in 2013 with his original singer, Derek St. Holmes, who he's been back with for the last couple of years. So I think that's at least something to look forward to now. Of course, folks, you've been listening to Rock Talk on Riffmania Radio, which I'd like to let our listeners know, Jeff. We got a new Facebook page up. It's called Riffmania Radio, because that's the site where this is going to air, and you can find that at www.riffmaniaradio.com. And if you have any thoughts about any of our recent shows or like to leave comments or send us a message, that's the place to do it. And we got other interviews that I've done, like with George Lynch and Jeff Pilsen, up there for you to check out. And our first show that's already up there. Basically, we're talking a little bit about Ronnie James Dio and Vince Neil and the recent Connecticut shooting. So please check that out. And now I'd like to talk a little bit about there was recently a Rolling Stone interview with Van Halen lead singer David Lee Roth. I don't know if you've got a chance to see that or not, Jeff.
I didn't see, but I didn't read the whole thing. I heard about it though. That Michael Anthony wants to get back in the band. Well, he wants Michael Anthony back in the band. I've always said the original members are always the best. You know, I mean, and why not? You know, I mean, I don't really know what happened between Eddie Van Halen and Michael Anthony. I don't know, but I think that would be great.
I mean, it's basically kind of a crazy story in that, to answer your question, as far as why Michael Anthony wasn't part of the reunion, it's kind of stupid in the sense that, you know, after the Gary Sharon album and he decided to leave Van Halen, they were really inactive for several years. And so Michael Anthony was doing shows with Sammy Hagar and appearing on his live shows, and Eddie Van Halen kind of felt, which is documented in Sammy Hagar's book if you haven't had a chance to read it, that Eddie Van Halen kind of dubbed Michael Anthony as a traitor, you know, that he was playing with the enemy since Sammy Hagar was no longer in the band. And when it came time to get back together, he just decided he didn't want Michael Anthony in the band, and he was going to have his son Wolfgang take over. And, you know, Van Halen fans, of course, since then have had their opinion that Michael Anthony should be back, which I never understood why, because he, even though he's just a bass player, so to speak, he's very important to the sound of that band, because he liked the background sound of that band, and that was always a very important part of the band, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really have much to do with his ability to play the bass, since he's just one of the original members, you know? And I mean, I've never been a huge fan of Van Halen. I mean, I like some of the songs. I like Eddie Van Halen's guitar playing, you know, even though he's been tried, you know, people try to copy him over and over and over. I mean, he really started made that style of guitar playing popular, you know. He's a legend, you know, as far as I'm concerned. But I mean, you know, a lot of, you know, I mean, but the way he goes about stuff, you know, when Dave quit the band, or when they kicked him out, whatever, you know, a lot of it, I mean, I really had to do with, he didn't like Valerie Bertinelli at the time when Eddie was married to her, and you know, stuff like that. I mean, I like Van Halen when Sammy Hagar was with the band, but I mean, I've always liked Sammy Hagar. You know, I think I actually liked him more when Sammy Hagar was with the band, because I think I'm kind of more of a Sammy Hagar fan than I am Van Halen. And you know, but I mean, David. But then I have to kind of go back. You know, I mean, Van Halen's, you know, and their old stuff, you know, with David Lee Roth, and, you know, like the first album, Running with the Devil, and all those songs, that's some good music, you know. But I think Eddie Van Halen, I think it would be cool if Michael Anthony were to rejoin and have the original lineup out there, you know. That would be cool.
Yeah, well, you know, the interesting thing is, I agree with a lot of what you're saying, but, like, Van Halen these days is more of a soap opera than anything else, and I say that because, like what you're saying is, they're kind of two Van Halens. I mean, there's one of David Lee Roth where, if you go back to listen to all the classic albums, you know, that's the original band, and so there's a lot of love for that lineup, and a lot of, if you go back and listen to some of the lyrics, a lot of stuff doesn't make sense, you know, it's kind of Roth's crazy play on words and stuff, but that's what made the band. He was another guy who was kind of over the top, and that's why a lot of the band members, I guess, you know, kind of didn't like at the time. He was so over the top, but, you know, before he left the band, he was the one, I understood, that was pretty much in control of the band. He directed the videos, and, you know, he did a lot of artwork and stuff, and then I understand after he left and they got Sammy Hagar, kind of the brothers kind of took control, and they kind of got you know, went a little control crazy. I mean, and the thing with Sammy Hagar, I could see, I'm just as big a fan of that lineup, because, you know, they actually wrote new songs, you know, the band as a whole together, you know. Whereas, interestingly enough, when they put out their reunion album, those are all those songs are on that album. Their demos that date back from, like, you know, the late 70s when the band first got back together. And the interesting thing is, if you read that article that David Lee Roth did with Rolling Stone, he's kind of talking, you know, it's kind of his coming out, like, with some of his complaints that, you know, Ed Van Halen and I have two different visions for a band. I wish Michael Anthony could come back. He'd rather work with his son. Me and Ed haven't written any new tunes in over 20 years, and he's only interested in writing with his son Wolfgang. So, you know, I think that has a lot to do with why he did the article.
Well, I think, you know, Sammy Hagar, in my opinion, is a better songwriter. He's a better lyricist. And, I mean, that's why, I mean, really, when you think about it, after Dave left the band and Sammy Hagar joined the band, they seemed to, their popularity seemed to increase. I mean, they were popular when David was with the band, but after Sammy Hagar, they became more commercial, you know. I mean, tons of hit songs with Sammy Hagar. You know, Sammy Hagar, he plays guitar, you know, he's the whole full package, you know. But personally, I like a lot of the songs that Sammy Hagar did with Van Halen, but I think I like Sammy Hagar's solo stuff more than I did, you know, do the stuff that he did with the band Van Halen. And I mean, if you listen to Van Halen when Sammy Hagar was with the band, I mean, you can tell what songs Sammy Hagar wrote, you know, and you can tell which ones Eddie Van Halen wrote, because Eddie Van Halen's songs just sound like Van Halen, and Sammy Hagar's songs just sound like Sammy Hagar with Van Halen backing him up. Because his style of writing is very distinctive, you know, and it's very unique and it's very distinctive. He don't sound like anybody but Sammy Hagar, and his style of writing, you know, it brought a whole new perspective to the band. You know, they actually even became an even better. They were a good band before, but when he came into the band, you know, because of his talent, his experience, it made them a better band. You know, but you know, you have your diehard Van Halen fans out there and David Lee Roth fans that would probably disagree with me. But then again, it all comes back to the same old saying. You know, music. You know, and obviously the music is just, you know, people's taste in music is just a matter of their own opinion. Everybody likes something else, something different. You know, and people that are just hell bent on this particular type of music or this particular type of band will argue at you to the blue in the face that this is way better. This is just, to you it's better. Okay, maybe not to me or maybe not to that guy or that guy. You know, I mean, why do you say it's better? You know, just because you like it?
Yeah, I mean,
okay, that's great. You know, but to me, we all have our opinions. Everyone's entitled to their opinion.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I got an appreciation for it all. I mean, to me, like, good music is just good music. And I listen to the Stanley stuff. I listen to Dave's stuff. I like it all. And to touch on what you were saying about Sam, you know, when he joined the band, they went on to greater success. And interestingly enough, you know, Van Halen, back with David Lee Roth, they've been quite successful. But at the same time, I think Sammy's been more successful as a solo artist since, you know, he was let go from a band. He's continued to be successful, and he's at a point in his life where it doesn't necessarily matter if he has a number one album or an album that's on the charts. He's made enough money where he's doing this right now just because of the pure love of doing it, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, that's, you know, what it comes down to. I mean, that's why I play music. I'm not in it to make a lot of money. You know, I mean, I'm never going to. You know, I've accepted that. I do it because I love it, because I just love it. I love playing music. I like to sing. I like to write songs. I like to, you know, share them with people. You know, Sammy Hagar is, you know, even though he's on a different level than I am, of course. I mean, but he's doing it for the same thing. I mean, you know, for me, I like all different kinds of music. You know, I mean, I see people on Facebook, you know, that, you know, metal is this, it's all about metal. I love heavy metal music, you know, but I also like other stuff too, you know. But, you know, I'm not going to try and shove other stuff. I mean, I'm not going to try to tell people, like, no, you should listen to this too and that and this and that. Check, because some people just don't want to. They don't want to. They don't like it, and so they're not going to listen to it. Me, I mean, my wife is the same way. You know, we like different kinds of music. I mean, it's not just all about one particular type of music or one band, or you know, I'll go on Facebook and I'll see people, you know, certain, you know, there's this one guy, you know, he's, I mean, every time I see his posts in the mainstream, it's always about Kiss. He's always like, I mean, I love Kiss, but I mean, you know, it's like this picture after picture after picture after picture. Kiss. Okay, cool, dude. Chill a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, that's just how some people are, because some people get to, you know, they almost worship, you know, certain bands and Motley Crue and stuff like that. I mean, that's all good stuff, but I'm a musician, and I myself have an appreciation for all different genres of music. I like blues, I like jazz, I like classical music, I like country and western music, I like hard rock, I like heavy metal, I like speed metal, I like whatever sounds good to me. You know, whatever sounds good, it's not, I'm not trying to focus on, okay, this is the kind of person I'm going to be, this is the kind of image I'm going to have, and this is the kind of music I'm going to listen to. Because that suits my image. I'm not trying to put an image out there, I'm just me, you know, and I like what I like. You know, if other people don't like it, they don't have to listen to it, but I'll listen to it.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of what's one of the things I enjoy about doing a show like this is, you know, you and I can talk about our views on what we think on any given subject. We can let people know, hey, this is the music we're listening to, this is what we like, check it out. But, you know, and it starts a discussion, but at the same time, you don't have to like what I like. You know, and we can still be friends. Just because you might like a band that I don't like, that doesn't mean we can't be friends, we can't talk. Like I was telling you, the last time we did this show is, I'm a huge Ritchie Blackmore fan, and for years I was kind of disappointed that he's been out of Deep Purple and doing a different style of music. He's into this, he's got this band, Blackmore's Nine. They kind of are more neoclassical. But you know what, I got a chance to hear latest album, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to go into this open-minded, because I'm a Ritchie Blackmore fan, and I was pleasantly surprised. You know, and I think the interesting thing about it was, it was a CD-DVD package, and I checked out the DVD portion first, and I was amazed at just how, even almost like, you know, how theatrical the live show was, his live show was, and I had a new appreciation for that. I said, you know, see, if I wouldn't have given that a listen, I might not, I might have missed out on some, you know, great music.
Exactly, yeah. Well, that's how I am, too. I mean, I like checking out new stuff, you know. But I mean, I might see something, somebody might post something on Facebook that I've never heard of, and I'll listen to it, you know, and if I don't, I mean, I'll know within like the first couple of seconds whether I like it or not, you know. If I don't like it, I turn it off, and if I don't sit there start making comments on it, you know, say, oh, that sucks, you know, and stuff like that, you know. I mean, I can't, you know, it's, I don't like it, you know. But I mean, yeah, you know, I mean, like Ritchie Blackmore doing something like that, I think that's pretty cool, and I still get to check it out, and I plan to do so as soon as I have a chance.
Yeah, and again, if you're going into it expecting it's going to sound like Deep Purple or Blackmore, not at all, but you have a new appreciation, because again, he's another guy that he's at a point in his life where he can do what makes him happy. He doesn't have to play with a band of guys that he doesn't get along with, you know. He's at a point where he can, you know, he's still making a living, so I think that's great to be in that position, you know, in life.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like when I can remember when I was in high school, you know, I was always a big Kiss fan. You know, that was my favorite band. You know, and I mean, as popular as Kiss is, I mean, back in the day, you know, there were a lot of people that didn't like them. You know, I mean, a lot of people I knew in my school, they took, you know, they put me down, you know, because of what I listened to. I didn't care, you know. I didn't care. It didn't mean anything to me. I would listen to whatever I want to listen to, and if you don't like it, then you don't have to listen to it. You know, see, I'm not like that. I will never put someone down because they listen to it. So even if you listen to Justin Bieber, you know, hey, if that's what you want to listen to, you know, God bless you. I don't like it, but I'm not gonna put someone down, you know, for the type of music that they listen to. It's just one little part of someone's life, you know, something that they enjoy. So why would I want to rain on their parade, you know? But you know, but you know, if everyone were like that, the world would be a perfect place. So it's not like that, though. You know, some people, live for the music that they listen to. They live by it. You know what I mean? It's like a very important part of their life. And if you don't like if you don't like what you listen to, you suck. I don't have that kind of attitude.
And, you know, getting back to the Van Halen article for a minute, what I want to also touch on, one thing that interested me was, you know, since they got back with David Lee Roth, he's been very tight-lipped, hasn't done too many interviews, and it's almost like because he wanted to be back with the band so bad, he kind of been careful until now about, going public with things like this. And I kind of thought it was interesting when he knows how Eddie Van Halen feels about Michael Anthony, that he would make that statement. I guess he's kind of frustrated with the current lack of Van Halen activity. And he recently went online also saying that there are going to be some European tour dates later in the year from Van Halen. And then the Van Halen's manager went online and made a statement to the effect that, you know, I'm Van Halen's manager. I manage Eddie, Alex, and Wolfgang Van Halen, and we'll let you know when there's going to be some European tour dates. And I thought that's kind of like they're kind of disconnecting him from the band, and almost makes me think, what, are they going to start looking for a new singer? Are they going to do something else?
Yeah, David Lee Roth, I'd have to talk to my wife. She knows a lot of, she's really smart, and she reads a lot, David Lee Roth's father was a very rich man, and he had a lot to do with them getting their foot in the door. He put up money, for them to record their album, and he was basically because of him that they got that they got their start, So David Lee Roth has always been if it wasn't for him, there probably wouldn't be no Van Halen.
Yeah, and interesting enough, like,
nobody probably ever heard of Eddie Van Halen before, because there's a lot of great musicians out there that ain't no one ever heard of them before, back in those days, there was no internet. You couldn't post your music to the internet or Facebook or go online. No, there wasn't. It was just all, word of mouth, and going playing the clubs and hoping that someone might see you,
Yeah, and again, talking a little bit about David Lee Roth's father, what I know is that he was a doctor, and interestingly enough, when a few years back, before they got back together, and Eddie Van Halen was suffering from his throat cancer, whatever it was, David Lee Roth heard about it, and he told him, go see my father. He recommended some doctor for him to see, and so I think he helped him with that. And also, oddly enough, if you read any of Sammy Hagar's book, I don't know if you did, but I did, and Sammy was commenting that he thinks, Eddie used to be a really cool guy, but he changed, when he really got into alcohol and stuff, and it really changed him. And I guess a recent example of that is, when he had cancer, he was saying that he doesn't think the cigarette or booze had anything to do with him getting cancer. It was having a guitar pick in his mouth every night. I'm like, okay,
you believe that, then.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it probably, in reality, it probably had everything to do with it. I've read, that Eddie was a big drinker. I'm not going to call him, call anybody an alcoholic,
You don't personally know, yeah.
The signs are all there, alcohol would change anybody. anyone that drinks a lot, when you're under the influence of alcohol or drugs, you're not your true self. You are whatever that does to you. That's what you become, Just like with me, with my bouts with alcoholism, there's a person that lives inside of me that, even I myself don't like that. I don't like that, but I hate that person. But it's what that stuff does to you. It'll make you make stupid decisions. Decisions that you wouldn't make when sober. It'll make you say things that you wouldn't normally say and do things that you wouldn't normally do. Sleep with people that you would never in a million years ever have anything to do with. There's all kinds of crazy crap, it makes you make irrational decisions, at the spur of the moment. But the thing is that you make your decisions and your actions, you know, you will reap what you sow. You know, no matter what, whether the person gets sober or whether they're still drinking, you will reap what you sow, and you'll continue to reap what you sow. You know.
And you know, interestingly enough, you know, I've never been one that's been addicted to anything, fortunately. But you know, and I've been the type of person that fortunately, like people go, let's go out and get drunk or let's have a beer. I tell people, you know, I don't need to do that to have fun. But what I want to ask you, if you don't mind getting a little personal for a minute, I was reading something on your Facebook page today where you're making a comment about the fact that today's St. Patrick's Day, and you've been sober for quite a while now, which you're quite proud of. You know, congratulations there. But my question to you is, how hard is that when, you know, you're a recovering alcoholic and you've been sober for years, and people come, hey Jeff, let's today's St. Patrick's Day, let's go get drunk. I mean, how hard is that to, you know, not to fall off the wagon?
How hard is it for me?
Yeah.
I have no desire to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not, it doesn't even take an effort for me, because I don't want to do that stuff. I like being sober. I love being sober. I would rather, you know, my worst day of being sober is far better than my best day back when I was drinking and using drugs. You know, I don't ever, I mean, I can honestly say that excuse me, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I can honestly say that, you know, I don't ever have, like, cravings or desires, none of that stuff, because I think back to, you know, what it was like for me, you know, and I don't ever want to be there again, because, you know, what a lot of people don't understand about alcoholism is that, well, someone who's an alcoholic, you know, alcoholism is a disease, right? People, a lot of people don't look at it that way. I've heard Christian preachers, you know, talk about it as all you need is this, and this, they don't understand. They don't understand, and they'll probably, and unless you've actually lived that life, a person would find it very hard to understand, you know, that it's a disease, and you can, there is no cure. It will always live inside the person, and all it would take to bring it back out is to take a drink of alcohol, one drink, just one drink, that's it, and the phenomenon of craving will immediately come back, and you will want, like an alcoholic like myself, when I start drinking, I immediately want more. I want more, 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 until I pass out, and then when I awaken, I want to do. I mean, the obsession is so overpowering that I cannot physically, mentally stop myself. I have no control over it. It's cunning, it's baffling, it's powerful. And people that are not, you know, an alcoholic or a drug addict, they can't understand that. You know, like for me, like if someone would come to me and say, hey Jeff, let's St. Patty's Day, let's go out and have a beer, I've been, no thanks. that's all I'd say. Well, why? Because I don't drink. Well, not even once in a while, no. Not even once in a while. Man, how do you have fun? I don't need that stuff to have fun. How do I have fun? I do things that make me happy, you know. And being sober, I can enjoy those things, you know. When I was, I mean, years ago, when I, you know, I mean, from the first time that I ever drank, I was 16 years old. I got into my parents' bar. They were gone. They'd gone someplace for the day. I had never been drunk before in my whole life. And I can remember it was during the time that I was in driver's education, learning to drive a car and get my driver's license. And they would show us these movies of drunk driving, and I was like, well, man, you know what? I mean, people get, well, what? I mean, I wanted to understand, I guess, you know, what the big deal was all about. So I got into my parents' bar downstairs in the family room, and from the first time that I ever drank, I drank like an alcoholic. I drank and drank until I passed out. I woke up. There was a paramedic sitting in front of me with one of my mother's soup pots. I threw up all over him. I mean, and the next day, I mean, I was sicker than I'd ever been in my entire life, you know. And every time that I drank, that's how I drank. I mean, I didn't have a lot of problems at first. I wasn't getting arrested. I wasn't going to jail. I wasn't going to hospitals. I wasn't, you know, I mean, causing myself bodily harm. But it progressed and continued until it got to a point where it was nothing but that every time I drank. Nothing but that. You know, I mean, and it took me a long time, over 20 years, of like going to AA and trying to stop before I could actually. Where I was just sick and tired of being sick and tired. That didn't want nothing to do with it no more. And you know, and it's not. I mean, for me, I couldn't just quit. You know, I couldn't just stop just like that. There were certain things I had to do. You know, I went for treatment, and I had to separate myself from that. I had to get rid of all my old friends. I do this thing, and like today, I have no desire to go to. I mean, I talked to some old friends online from back home in Chicago, but that's all I'm up to. Hey, how you doing? And I'll see you post. These are people that are like, you know, back when you're like 20 years old, and me, say, yeah, let's go out and party, have a couple beers, blah, blah. Now they're like 50 years old, and say, yeah, well, and to me, they just look like a bunch of old drunks.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't say nothing to them because it's not my place. I'm not gonna, hey man, that's what you want to do. You want, I mean, if you're able to function and live, you know, some of my league don't have jobs, the wives left them 50 kids, and they don't understand why. It's all their fault.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, you know, I had to look at myself. I had to take a good hard look at myself and stop blaming everybody for all my problems. And my problems were mine, and I created them. You know, through the things that I did. You know. And I couldn't, you know, I mean, and I look at people like that, and it's just like, God bless you, you know, I mean, I'll pray for you, but that's about all I can do. Pray that maybe someday they might get, before they die, you know, before it kills them, that they may find, you know, find what I found, you know. But, you know, unfortunately, there are more people that die from it than don't. There's people that stay sober for 20 years and go back out and start doing it again, and they die. It will kill you. It will absolutely kill you. There's no ifs, ands, or buts, no two ways. There's no, I mean, they can paint it any color they want, but it will kill you. Okay, I'm off my soapbox.
No, but, you know, first of all, I got to thank you for getting so personal because, like I said, I've never fallen victim to those addictions, thank God, but I can kind of relate in the sense that I've had people in my life that I've loved that have been alcoholics, and so, you know, I can kind of relate, and I can hear the passion in your voice when you talk about this stuff, which kind of leads me to my next question. I was also reading on your Facebook page today that you've been giving some thought to writing a book about your life, kind of based on some of these experiences, which I think would make for an interesting read. How serious are you about that?
I'm very serious about it. It's something I really want to do, you know, because, I mean, not just because I want to, because it ain't really about me. It'd be about, because I one way that I'm able to continue to do what I do is help other people, you know, but they have to seek the help. I can't go out and grab them and say, look, I'm going to help you. Come here. You know, I can't do that. You know, and I just think that, you know, I mean, people would be amazed that I'm still alive because of some of the things that have happened to me. You know, I could sit and talk to you for 3 hours and still not tell you everything.
And the,
you know?
The little bit I've learned about you is interesting, you know.
So, but yeah, that's something I really want to do, and I think I'm going to follow through with it. I mean, I don't know how to go about getting it published, but I mean, all that can come back, you know, that can, you know, come later on. But yeah, there's something I really want to do. I've talked to my wife about it. She even said, you should do it. You know, I've talked to a family member, Jeff, you should do it. So I'm going to do it because maybe there might be someone out there that might read it. It might save their life.
I mean, it's it's true because, I mean, I got to tell you, since you and me started doing this show, beforehand, you know, you and me would talk back and forth via email, and I'd interview sometimes for my site and stuff. But I got to say, in doing this, this is now the fourth show we've done, and I've gotten to know a lot more about you, and it makes for very interesting, it's a very interesting story, even though you had to struggle for many years with that stuff. I think, like you're saying, if you could save one kid from getting in the car drunk just because, I mean, you built quite a fan base for yourself. You know, you think, oh, who am I, Jeff DeBerry? Who's going to be interested in reading my book? But I think a lot of people would. And even when I posted about our radio show on your site the other day, I mean, we got a lot of hits just from posting your picture and making the announcement about the show, you know. So I think quite a bit of people would be interested in reading that.
I think they would.
And,
even if they're not an alcoholic, even if they weren't an alcoholic or didn't have a problem with drugs or alcohol, it would make for some interesting reading because it is a story,
yeah.
And it's a very it's an amazing story, to be honest with you. But see, the thing is that it's not like it's over.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my life continues. know, and it's not like, it ain't like, you know, I'm cured and I'm never going to drink again. Or never going to, because those things are always, there's always a possibility that that could happen, you know. But see, as long as I continue to do the things that I do one day at a time, I don't have to worry about that kind of stuff anymore. I don't have to live that life anymore. You know, I see people, there was one guy, every time I post something about it, there's some guy come out, I'm drinking, I'm throwing some wine, and it's like, good for you, dude, I got tired of his crap, right? I had to eat him and blocked him. Because he was just annoying, and he was just belligerent. Hey, dude, you do what you want to do, man. I'm not talking to you, all right? You get off my page and go snort your lines, go drink your beer, go beat your wife and kick your kids in the head and kick your dog and do whatever, man. But I don't want no part of it. Get the hell away from me. You know, I don't associate with people like that. You know, and people like that, they're just belligerent. I mean, I just look at them like you're an idiot. You know, you're just an idiot. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, because you're telling me that you're gonna. I mean, you're telling me this like I should envy you in some way, like, because I can't do it no more. It ain't that I can't do it no more. I don't want to do it no more. All right, it's not that I can't. It's that I can do it anytime I want to. I choose not to. You know, that's the point I'm trying to get across. You know, I mean, people can post stuff about drinking. Hey, God, I mean. Some people can do it. I can't do that and be able to live a normal life. If there's any such thing as a normal life, but I mean, I can't do it and function as a human being. You know, I'll die. It's I mean, that's the bottom line. I will die. It ain't about getting arrested no more. It's not about, you know, getting divorced or anything. It's about survival for me. You know, it's a matter of survival. And I had to do every single thing that I did to get to where I am today, you know, to be the person that I am, because this is the real me. You know, this is not some drunken idiot falling all over the place, smacking his head against coffee tables, you know, going to the hospital, waking up in jail, waking up in someone's front yard, or these are things that I've done, you know, and it's like, man, I, you know, and how could I say, man, I had a good time last night. That was fun. Let's do it again. You know, I can't, you know, to me, there ain't no fun in that kind of stuff. Waking up sick, you know, having to drag my butt to work, I mean, sick as a dog, puking. This doesn't sound appealing to me anymore. You know, it doesn't sound appealing. Not remembering what I did, finding, you know, walking up, looking to see where my car is outside. I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, and I'm sure that anyone that drinks a lot can relate to these things, you know, because if these things are happening to you, there's a good chance that you might be an alcoholic. I'm not going to say that you are, but there's a possibility, you know. I mean, I don't, it's about survival for me. You know, someone wants to take me out for a beer, you know, I don't go to bars, all right? I don't hang around bars, okay? So we have a saying in the 12-step program I go to that, you know, if you hang around a barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut.
Yeah.
I don't hang around barbershops.
Wow.
You know, so I don't hang around bars. You know, I don't go sit, not to watch a game, not to have a Coke. You know, when I went to a bar, I went there to get drunk.
Yeah.
I mean, that was what I did. You know, that was the only reason that I went. I didn't go there to pick up women. I went there to get drunk. That's what I did. And whatever else happened within the time I was there, that just, you know, that was, it was what it was. You know.
More power to you, my friend. And let me just say that one thing I really respect about everything you've just said is, you know, like I said, I've known people in my life that were alcoholics, and, you know, a lot of them have got the attitude that, you know, I haven't had a drink in a month, I'm cured. But you're smart enough to realize that you worked hard and you continue to work hard, and as long as you do that, hopefully you don't have to ever pick up another bottle. But, you know, you realize it's an ongoing struggle, which, so I respect you for that, you know.
That's why I would like to write. I am going to sit down, and I mean, I don't know how long it's going to take me to do it, but I'm going to write a book about my life and the things I've done. But it's not going to just all be about, it's not going to be like a big drunk log.
No,
about, you know, about every single time I went out and got drunk and got stupid.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be about, you know, I a good portion of it is going to be about what I did to overcome that, you know, and what I do on a daily basis to continue to maintain that, you know. It's not about, for me, it's not about, I mean, I'm not a Bible thumper or anything like that. It's about having spirituality, about being, you know, being spiritual, and that's what being sober is to me. Because without that, I will not be sober. I might not be drinking or anything, and I could go, and it don't matter how many days or years or months that I've gone without. I will never ever be cured of that. You know, I will never be cured of it. It will always be there. You know, and it's not, and this kind of disease is not like, you know, like if I were to go for 20 years without drinking and then drink again, and it can be like a start all over again. It can be like I picked up where I left off. It can be like I never stopped.
Yeah.
Okay. And that will lead to certain death for me.
Okay, my friends, you've been listening to Rock Talk. I'm Jason J. Rock Houston, and we've been talking with my friend Jeff DeBury. Let's take a break for a minute because we got some music for you. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Okay, just kind of taking a break there, but we'll get back. I want to talk to you now, Jeff, a little bit about kind of what I've been doing. I also, as you know, write for an online magazine called Chaotic Rift, and I recently had the opportunity to interview George Lynch and Jeff Pilson and Brian Tishy, all members of TNN. That's a new band where they've got a great new CD out where half of it is original music sung by Jeff Pilson, and then they have guest vocalists on. They do covers of some of their Dokken hits with various singers like Timur Proens and Doug Pinnick from King's X and Robert Mason, who's now in Warrant. And the interesting thing about the album is people think, you know, why would I want to hear a, you know, Dokken song redone by these other singers? But they kind of, you know, they pick great songs such as Alone Again. They chose to have Sebastian Bach do that, and you know, and he fits the you know, his voice fits that song, and he kind of did it. Each of these songs kind of are really they give him a real kick in the ass, you know what I mean? And it's a real updated version. And then on top of that, you get some new original music from these guys. And interestingly enough, so they got the one album out now, and it's called TNN. And I interviewed the guys separately, but they had a lot to talk about. So if you go to riffmaniaradio.com, you can hear the interview I've done with Jeff and George separately. They're up there. And coming up in the next week or so, we should be having the new issue of Chaotic Riffs. And that's got my interview with the drummer Brian Tishy. He's also played in Lynch Mob and Foreigner and Billy Idol and a lot of other bands. And he was kind of an interesting guy to talk to because, interestingly enough, besides being a drummer, you know, and he was also until recently just the drummer in Whitesnake as well. But he also plays guitar. He's a multi-instrument guy like you, and he's got his own original project now called Sun with Sass Jordan. And that's another thing I'm going to talk to him about in great detail. But he was telling me, you know, he's a drummer, and he has this idea for, like, he wants to put together a DVD for, like, a drum sympathy. And I told him, I said, that's, you know, a great original idea. So look for that stuff coming down the line, folks. And I also recently had the chance to talk with Oney Logan. He's a singer from Lynch Mob, and he's been doing the Dio Disciples project lately. And they left for a cruise, you know, I think just on Saturday, called the Monsters of Rock that they're playing on. And that's another great project, the Dio Disciples, if you guys ever get a chance to check it out. It's basically Ronnie James Dio's surviving band members playing his music from all throughout his career, Black Sabbath, Rainbow, and Dio. And then they got some guys like Oney and Timur Proens that were actually friends with Ronnie, you know, up there singing. And part of the reason I interviewed Oney Logan was not only was I a fan of his from the Lynch Mob, but also because he's doing the Dio Disciples. And when I saw them perform in concert, I was amazed at what a powerful singer he was. I mean, I'd heard of stuff with the Lynch Mob, but I had no idea that he could sing like Ronnie James Dio, but he had that, you know, power in his voice. So that interview, again, will be going in Chaotic Riffs probably in the May issue. So look for that down the line. And I know, Jeff, you've been working on a cover record that's just about ready to get released. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's just a is actually available on my Reverb Nation page, at my Reverb Nation store. It's just something that I did just for the fun of it. I there's a lot of songs that I really wanted to do, but I mean, I had to choose songs that I could actually sing. You know, I mean, I don't have a real big range as far as my vocal ability goes, and it's just basically a tribute to some of my some of my favorite songs from back in the day, a few of my favorite bands, and it's just something different that I wanted to do. You know, I had some friends helping me out with it, and it was fun. It was a lot of fun to do, and I listened back to it, and it came out pretty good. Anyway, it came out really good, and I'm really happy with it. So I mean, if anybody wants is interested in a copy of it, it's at my Reverb Nation. Just go to Reverb Nation and look me up, Jeff DeBerry, DeBury, and my page will come up, and you can. My Reverb Nation store is on there. I guess you just have to look around. This is probably at the top of the page, and you can purchase it, and you can get a copy of it there. Like I said, it's just something that I wanted to do. It was fun, you know. But now I'm back to working on some brand new music. I'm working on it on a kind of a bit of a different sound, and I'm trying to change things up a little bit, you know. So we're like my new stuff don't sound like all my old stuff, you know. I'm kind of moving. I mean, it's the same. It's always gonna be me, but it's just my sound and different effects and different drum. Because I use a digital kit, and it's like an assortment of different type of drum sounds and stuff like that. So I mean, I'm kind of working with that a little bit.
And what I wanted to ask you a little bit about the cover of the album, because I know originally the first cover you ever did was actually of the Poison song "Every Rose Has Its Thorn," and then you told me a couple months back that you weren't really much into the idea of doing cover songs. So what changed your mind?
I don't know. It's like anything, I guess. You know, I'm not turning into a cover musician. You know, but I mean, it just came to me one day that I just felt like doing it. You know, I thought it'd be fun to do. I really can't pinpoint any particular reason why I decided to do it. You know, it's just something that just came over me, and I thought it'd be fun. You know, it was a lot of fun. You know, and it was difficult because I'm used to just doing my own music. You know, and as far as cover songs go, doing kind of cover songs, I mean, the only instrument that I've ever played, you know, on cover songs in the past was the drum, you know. And so, I mean, this is one of the reasons why, you know, I would never do cover songs, because I all I do is my own stuff, you know, when it comes to playing guitar and bass and all that stuff. But it's something that I just felt like doing.
Well, I'm glad you did, because let me tell you,
being an independent musician, yeah. I can do that kind of stuff. You know, I don't need to get the other band members' opinions, because they're on.
Yeah.
You know, as far as my own music goes, they're on, and I don't play with a band. It's just me, you know.
I mean, I think it's great you did, because let me first of all tell people that, you know, I've heard the stuff that's on there, and I think that, first of all the stuff on your album came out great, and I think you picked songs that really fit you. For example, there's you got Fallen Angel, Talk Dirty to Me, and I think Every Rose is on there too. So you got three Poison songs, but so what? Those are three great songs, and your voice fits it. And I think the great thing about doing a project like this is not only can you let people know, hey, this is the type of music I'm into, but you can introduce them to some songs. For example, I was really interested to learn that you were a fan of Lionel Richie. You know, you have a Lionel Richie song on there. I never heard that song before, but then because you recorded your version, I went and checked it out, and I thought, you know, that's the cool thing about a project like that.
Yeah, just stuff like that. You know, I mean, I'm not a huge Lionel Richie fan. I mean, I have a lot of respect for him. He's a great songwriter.
Yeah.
He's a phenomenal singer, but that's just one song in particular that I just always liked. You know, it was actually in a movie back in the 80s called The Last American Virgin.
Yeah.
You know, and when I seen that movie and I heard that song, it's just, it, like, it just send chills up my spine for some reason. There was just a lot of the way it was written, the lyrics, and just the way it's played. I mean, I love ballads.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I love metal a lot. I love, you know, hard rock and music. But I also like ballads. I'm a huge fan of ballads. You know, and it was a song that I really liked a lot. You know. It was hard to do too. It wasn't because I can't sing like Lionel Richie, so I just did my own version of it.
Well, that's the cool thing, and don't misunderstand me, because I'm with you. I don't see why anybody can't be a Motley Crue fan, Lionel Richie fan, you know, fan of Eagles. You know, if it's good, it's good. And again, that's the cool thing about doing something like that. You can tell somebody, you know, this is something I'm into, and you know, if you like it, great. And if not, you know, still check it out.
Yep.
And so, this has been Rock Talk on Riff Mania Radio, and I guess we're going to get ready to wrap things up, Jeff. Is there anything else you'd like to let our listeners know before we end the show?
No, just that I am currently, I started work on some brand new music. I do have some songs that I recorded. I did some re-recordings of a couple of songs that were on Lost in the City and Love of the Game, and I'm thinking about, there's like six songs I believe that I did, and I'm thinking about putting all those together on an album, and maybe putting those out there. So maybe you might be seeing that coming up in the future. As far as like a brand new album with all brand new original material, it will be coming soon. That's all I can say about it. I'm hoping maybe sometime in the summer, maybe towards the end of the summer, early fall, I'll have an album done and have it out.
Okay, because you know, talking a little bit about
good stuff.
Talking a little bit about cover stuff before we end the show. I know on Tuesday there's going to be an Anthrax album coming out of. It's all cover versions of their favorite rock songs. Like they got they cover Big Eyes by Cheap Trick. They cover TNT by AC/DC. Jailbreak from Thin Lizzy. So that's something I'm kind of interested in hearing, because I've heard some of the stuff that they posted online, and what they posted so far is pretty cool. So I urge people to go check that out Tuesday when it's released on March 19th. And I also want to ask you, Jeff, because coming in June, Black Sabbath will be releasing their reunion album, oddly enough, titled 13th, and it'll be their first album since 1979 to feature Ozzy Osbourne. Is that something you're looking forward to?
That would be cool. Yep, yeah. I'm definitely going to check that out. I'd like to hear Ozzy with Black Sabbath again. That would definitely be something I want to check out.
Okay, well, and then the only other thing I want to let you know about, Jeff, since I know you're as huge a Kiss fan as I am, is this week coming up, I'll be interviewing Richie Weiss, who, oddly enough, he was one of the producers who produced Kiss's first two albums, you know, the Kiss album and Hotter Than Hell. And what I'm going to actually be producing him about is, I'll probably be talking to him a little bit about working with Kiss, but he back before he worked for Kiss, him and the other producer, Kenny Kerner, they were in a band together called Dust. So we'll be checking that out a little. And they actually, the drummer in their band was Marky Ramone, who of course went on to success with the Ramones. So that's something maybe we'll be talking about when we talk, you know, on the next Rock Talk show. So be on the lookout for that as well.
Sounds good, Jason.
Okay, thanks again, Jeff, for taking time to do this. I really appreciate this, and this episode of Rock Talk will be up on Riff Mania Radio probably within the next coming weeks. So thanks again for listening, and if you guys like what we're doing, go to the Facebook page and let us know what you think. Thanks again. We'll be talking to you again in a couple weeks. This has been Rock Talk. Thank you.
All right, Jason.
You've been listening to Riff Talk on RiffManiaRadio.com. If you're interested in being featured on one of our shows, please visit the appropriate section of our website. Until next time, keep on rocking and banging that head.